Andrew, do you have your hand up or?
Oh, no, I'm holding a bar up here. I'm holding a bar. It helped me. When I'm sitting for a while, I was in my eyes.
You were like, your hand.
It's really like calisthenics.
Right. Just jump in, bro. We're good.
Even though Andrew's younger, we've all gotten old to the point we need.
Yeah. I may be the youngest, but I am in my mid-30s still.
We're struggling.
This is longer than calling a Knicks game.
Actually, a Knicks game will have started and ended by the time we're done. So,
yeah,
quite literally
right,
longer than
right inside of our.
There you go. I enjoy. I mean, I'm having fun. Don't get me wrong. Just every now and then have to stretch. That's all.
This will we can make this into like five episodes.
There you go. You're number two.
So my number two. Love this. I thought it was amazing. I thought it did. On a more creative, more interesting, funnier, more visceral, less kid-friendly scale than Barbie. Everything that Barbie was trying to do in terms of the message about women empowerment and the subservience over time and just kind of like the fear of women's power and sexuality and just everything that they bring to the table. And we as men can't conceive that they might actually be way smarter and savvier than us. Poor Things was fucking fantastic.
Let me say one thing.
Okay.
This was the movie I saw last night where it's like, do I make it my 10 or do I leave it off the list completely? So it actually worked out perfectly.
Okay.
Because cool. I was like, someone's going to have it high up. And I don't want to waste the number 10 on Poor Things. So go ahead.
I love Yorgos Lanthimos, the director. The Killing of a Sacred Deer
amazing.
Blew my fucking mind when I saw that. And I was like,
please don't say lobster.
What the fuck is this? Like, that was just nuts. And then the lobster. I love the lobster. That was weird.
That was a conversation.
And this is a movie.
It was a conversation.
This is a guy that sort of like he combines the just the utterly fantastical with like real world stuff and sort of shines a light on, you know, the darkness that comes with all of that stuff. So I saw that. And then The Favorite was very good. Didn't love that as much as I loved the first two. But when I heard about this movie and the buzz that it was gaining, I couldn't wait to see it. And then when it finally came out in the theater, I ran to see it. Tara and I saw it together. It was a Saturday or Sunday morning. I forget which, but I just was just glued to this, my seat, my eyes to the screen. It's gorgeous. The black and white versus the sumptuous color of the different, you know, vignettes of the story and how it like is very specific to what's going on. Emma Stone's performance is off the charts great. Like, she is a revelation in this movie.
Isn't she like a premier actress in everything? Because, I mean,
she is. She's great. I mean, you know, I started, I haven't finished The Curse. She's great in that. She's just been
You haven't finished The Curse?
I've heard that.
I haven't, but now it's one of those once I got through this show, I was like, all right, I've done rewatching and watching stuff. I can catch up on The Curse.
She's fantastic in everything that she's been in, but in this movie in particular, there's no self-consciousness. Like, she starts as it's literally like a child in a woman's body. And that level of discovery over time is hilarious and sensitive and dramatic. You know, the Mark Ruffalo's character just sort of losing his mind over who she is, thinking he could control her, and then realizing that, like, no, he's ruined by her and her power. You know, the Willem Dafoe character being sort of the Dr. Frankenstein of it all, but really having a big heart. The guy who would be the husband, again, sort of that understanding far beyond anything that I would ever be able to have. There's just such great acting and just, I mean, it's so vibrant. Like when they go to Greece and these other areas and they're on the ship, just the way it looks, like I was living in it. I was breathing it in. And this just wonderful story about her sort of maturation and her journey. I was with it the entire time. And I walked out of it and I was like, oh my God, like if there wasn't this other movie that I'm just so in love with, that's probably the best thing that I've seen so far this year. Like it just, the creativity was buzzing in my ears, my brain, my eyes when I watched that movie. So yeah, Poor Things is real high up there for me.
Damn. Who else saw it?
We all didn't get to see it yet.
Oh, so Tim.
Oh, Tim, sorry. There's nothing really to spoil,
and I know enough about it.
Spoil this movie, really.
It's all performance and nuance, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm actually curious if the next time we talk, if it's grown on me, because I was, I echo everything you said. I'm less than 24 hours since seeing it, so I'm tough. It's tough for me to put it on like a top 10 list with all these other. But yeah, I was ready to put it at 10. So who knows if it grows over time. Emma Stone is, I almost wonder if she's underrated at this point, because I'm trying to remember the last thing she was in that, like Aloha is the one that I think we all go to. It's like, oh, you were bad, but like you were miscast.
Like, she was a Hawaiian.
Right. Like at a certain point, I'm just like, I'm wondering it, like when's she going to be bad in something? Like it's very Christian Bale. Like just suck once and that'll be great. You know,
good for you.
Kevin, your thoughts on Poor Things?
Everything's been said already, really. It's it's different. If you don't really know what you're getting into and watching, you're gonna get your fucking mind blown. And Emma Stone is fantastic. There's really nothing more you can say about her performance. She's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, there were some older people in the theater in the back. And at first, again, like, they were like talking, kind of like with zone of interest. They were like, what is this? But like, once you get past, like, once she goes out on her journey, silence, because they were fucking in it for the rest of the movie.
You see, you're lucky because the old couple of my that was sitting the row in front of me, they had the closed captioning device on the thing. So the guy's reading it, explaining it to the wife. She's going, but I don't understand this. And I'm like, can you all shut the fuck up? But
oh my God. I was
able to tune them out enough to go, this is a fantastic movie.
That is a good thing when you're able to still find the value in the movie after also, dealing with
please, that. Please, can streaming services. I can't do that shit all the time. Florida.
Yeah. That was one that I was like, kept looking. Is it coming out? Is it coming out? And I was like, yes. You know what? Fuck it. Let's go to the movies. This is one I definitely want to see.
Zone of Interest.
I did that this week, but it was gone. Like I couldn't find it at any of the theaters.
I held out on both. That's the shit thing. And I know they would have both made my top five.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Tim, you're going to love Poor Things. I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Kevin, I'm going to go to your number one because I'm pretty sure my number two is also Chris and Tim's number one.
Fair enough. Let me get back up. Blah, blah, blah. Let me see what. Oh, yeah. It's Past Lives.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was Celine Song's directorial debut. Holy fucking shit.
Like, imagine that's your first movie out of the gate.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Between her and Greta Lee, who was the third of those top three performances, if we're going to have a conversation about being robbed and snubbed, those two right there.
Yeah.
Tao Yu, I think, is the way to pronounce the male lead.
I believe so.
It's almost like a Melton performance where he's a fully developed man who seemed to be stunted because of culture or whatever going on.
But also the abruptness of the ending of that relationship, or at least at that time.
I think the thing was that, at least for me, and I'll be honest, say this, I've lived the storyline. I think most guys have in some way where you reconnect, or even if you want to say social media connect with somebody to where you're like, oh shit, what would have happened if choices were made? It's heartbreaking because it's a beautiful story.
It's a beautiful story to me, even more difficult because the third party, being the woman's husband, who is way too fucking understanding, but it's, you care about all three. You really don't know how you want it to end. Then Chris alluded to it. I guess it ends the way it should, but there's that scene on the sidewalk at the end where
that's the longest 2 minutes I've
that
is Rooney Mara eating the pie long.
It's that was devastating. That was a devastating movie.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Yeah. The thing that, like, with the husband, you know, like, that just, they could have played it so differently so many times. Like, they could have made him the guy that she just happened to end up with and almost not villainize him, but make you be able to rationalize her choosing the first love.
Correct.
But
in a rom-com, about exactly what would happen.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But by layering him and showing that they have a legitimate real relationship, and then also that he's so understanding about allowing her to explore this space with this guy that, you know, she's talked to and known her whole life. Like, that just makes it so much better and realer and not just your standard, which is,
I think, that's what makes it amazing. It's not paint by numbers.
Correct.
It's not paint by numbers. And it makes you just feel this is real world.
And the fact that it's her first movie, like, your instinct would probably be, and maybe that's the benefit of it. Maybe it is. They said, look, we love this the way it is. So just do it.
Mm.
Right. Like, you're not beholden to, oh shit, you know, like, this has got to be another one that's successful for me. So I got to kind of play by the rules a little bit.
Mm.
Like, maybe she was just like, no, this is a story that I want to tell. And this is how it feels. But it's brave to tell that story and not do the conventional things.
I believe it is semi-autobiographical. I'm not 100%. I think this pulls a lot from her life. I know that she does
live with
her husband in New York. Fuck. If this is being pulled from your life and you're still with that man and you're what?
Yikes.
And he must be the understanding dude. Yes. That's like, you made a great movie about how much you're in love with the guy that was before me. Oh boy.
The other guy must have been Drake.
Oh God. wow. what's man? I was about to say something like so heartfelt, and I just like, there's no way to follow that because maybe I'll just say this: I have had a tough time going back and revisiting this movie because of. Not Pat, because I'm like in a very happy, stable relationship. And the first time going through it, I was like leading up to my wedding day. And those who know my story, like I went through a pretty traumatic breakup in the early 2010s that like anytime I'd watch stories about like what could have been, I'd like. I would have similar emotions and I'd immediately like, no, that was bad. That was toxic. Go away. Shut up. So watching this, and it's helped me with art over the last couple of years that I've been able to watch good things from a place of goodness, I should say, that I responded to this in a different way. And it's like, oh, this is good. This is sweet. I do know there's a part of me that could open up a little more that I know I could watch. And on a rewatch, I don't know if the just walls or safeguards are up anytime I watch it. To your point though, the actual past life that they're talking about and the alternative, like when she says the thing about in the next life, I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like I get it. I like, and to your point, this was when Oscar Mornin got the outrage came. I was like, yes, you're right. There was a woman that could have been nominated for a director. Her name is Celine Song.
Yes, you know? Not Greta Gerwig.
Not Greta. So But yeah, I agree, Kev. This was outstanding.
And I thought that what was the actress's name, Kev?
Greta Lee.
She should have been nominated too.
By far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So want to talk about Oppenheimer now?
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It is
It's my number one.
It was mine as well.
It was my number one until I saw Zone of Interest, but it's my number two.
Damn it.
I think Kevin, you had it at like seven. That's
Kevin's number,
six. Yeah.
Which again is not a bad spot.
Like No.
It's a very good spot on a top 10, you know.
If I may, being the resident Nolan fan who's maybe been an apologist for things in the past, put things at a higher level than some of the others have. Like I had Tenet, I think, at number one or number two the year that came out.
Yeah. That was a strange year, though.
It was a strange year. That was the one movie that I got to see in the movie theater with a mask on my face.
Tenet made my top 10 because I saw like 25 movies that year.
Yeah.
I can emphasize that it was like the one of the reasons I loved it was like, oh, I get to go to the movies. Like, haven't been able to do this in 6 months, you know?
Yeah, I think this is the movie where Nolan puts it all together. Visually, storytelling-wise, acting, and you finally, at least for me, I finally felt real, genuine emotion and investment in the characters. I think the all-star cast is ridiculous. Like, and everyone gets a moment. It may not be the moment, but everyone gets a moment. The structure of the film. So this sort of the learning of who Oppenheimer is and sort of why he is the way he is probably occupies the first half hour of the movie, maybe the first 45 minutes. And there's a lot there that you start to learn. They intercut it. He intercuts it with some jump forwards, some jump backs. But really, it's about like sort of his brilliance and then his search for how do I corral all of these crazy ideas that are banging around in my head and find a way to channel it into real applicable mathematics or engineering or whatever it is to quiet my mind. Once you get through sort of that, then you've got, all right, now we're in a race against the Nazis to build this weapon of mass destruction. You've got to assemble a team. You've got to find the brightest minds. We're going to play fast and loose with national security because we got to be fast and we've got to get the best people in here to build this thing before Hitler gets a chance to do it. And so there's this clock ticking pace to that whole section of the story, intercut with his relationship with Florence Pugh, which is complicated. But I don't want to
bomb goes boom, not kaboom.
Right. I don't want to underplay like how important she is because she's like the one person in Oppenheimer's life that doesn't sort of get sucked into his orbit and his genius and his magnetism. She's like off on her own. Like these are my rules. And I'm going to allow you in when I want you to. And that's a little bit of a humbling thing. It also pushes him towards Emily Blunt's character, his wife, who ends up being the one force towards the end of the situation that is like, no, fight back. Fuck these motherfuckers, which I appreciate. So that whole race the clock to get to the bomb, the literal, we talked about it earlier, you know what's going to happen. We obviously built multiple bombs and we unleashed these weapons of war and, you know, thousands and thousands of people died and it's horrible. And it unleashed the next wave of, what war could be. And that's a lot of what the second half of the movie is once we're successful in accomplishing this mission, which we're all on board for. We're like, you kind of forget like everything that's going to be a negative result of this. You're like, let's get this bomb built. Oh, I want the test to go well. All these great actors playing their great characters and getting these great moments. you have that really successful test, and then it's like, okay, fuck. How is this has now changed the world? And he's Prometheus. He's the guy who's given the god, given people the ability to have this godlike power, and he fucking regrets it. And then it's okay, trying to slow down the machine who wants to just take it to the next level and bring it as far as it can go so that they can rule the world and beat the Russians and all this other stuff and all this intrigue about whether or not spies were in his camp and was he involved in bringing them in and sharing information. The Robert Downey Jr. character and his sort of character switch up and kind of the way they frame all that up. Even the kid who played Han Solo gets his moment. Honestly, the intrigue of the movie to me doesn't kick in until after you show that the bomb has been successful. And so that last, 45 minutes or so is the meat of the movie after I've already seen 2 hours of just frenetic brilliance. The IMAX shots, the music, the cutting in of like all the visuals around, like as he's thinking about, as his brain works to the end. It felt like everything that Nolan's been building to in every movie that he's made. And this was the one that put it all together. And I've watched it at, I think, 4 times now. And it's not, it's not short. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. It has not slowed down. I've not been like, all right, let me skip past this. Every time I am just completely engrossed in the visuals, the audio, the storytelling, the acting. And like, this is, again, there might be some movies that you guys think are more deserving for whatever reasons. I feel like this is the year that this is the movie that kind of box office wise, quality of work wise, acting wise, Cillian Murphy kills it. I feel like it's the one movie that kind of put it all together in this package that says, if this isn't best picture material, what is? And it just so happens that he's kind of like my contemporary Spielberg. He's the guy that I find speaks to me the most from a director's standpoint. And for him to be able to finally kind of put all the pieces together and not have something that I can look at and say, that was a misstep that degrades a little bit from the movie. It's the year of Oppenheimer for me. Despite the great work that a bunch of other filmmakers have done, throughout. All right, now I'll get off my soapbox.
No, dude, I love, by the way, I heard an interpretation of this movie of like, this was Nolan and his regret for the superhero boom that he started with The Dark Knight. Like, that's the allegory.
Make a blockbuster about a guy.
Yeah, like this, like his face that become a meme at the end. Is
that about himself? Yeah. That he made a movie about a man who invented the destruction of the world.
Yes.
Just because he invented the destruction of fucking cinema,
Hollywood. Yes. Now, the chain reaction has created. my favorite movie of all time.
That's not my number one. Now I'm mad.
Well, my number one ever is Jurassic Park. And the famous line from that movie, or one of the famous lines from that movie, is Jeff Goldblum saying they were so busy thinking about whether they could that they never stopped to think about if they should. And that is the first 2 hours of this movie. And the commitment to showing the science of it all, and like it's super complicated and obviously went over a lot of my head throughout the first 2 hours. There's enough on the rewatch that I get it. Okay, they got to build the thing. Like that's what you're doing. Like that's what this conversation was. We got to do this to build the thing. There's enough morality put in because like they discover that Germany has split the atom, and then there's a conversation like, well, if you don't build it, they will. So that's why there's a race to it. And then when you finally, and this is my arguably my favorite moment in a movie theater this year, maybe just in cinema this year, was watching in 70 millimeter in IMAX in Lincoln Center with a theater full of people that were there to see it. So they were quiet watching the actual detonation of the bomb.
Yes.
And experiencing that moment. Like, it was an out of body, like, oh my gosh, like they did it. And you feel all the things. And then the gut punch comes of the next scene and the fallout from what they actually accomplished. Yeah, I this is Nolan's masterpiece. And I still have one other movie ahead of, like, for my favorite Nolan movies, but I echo, like, the legal stuff and the courtroom, not courtroom stuff, but like the grand the jury stuff,
confirmation.
Yeah, the confrontation yeah. stuff between him in that room, and the Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, part. Yeah,
yep.
Like, I likened it a lot to JFK or The Social Network, where like it was cutting back and forth, and I dug it. I think it's an entirely separate movie, but I didn't think it was a bad movie. Yeah, I agree. This was outstanding.
Yeah, and Emily Blunt as sort of not the Lady Macbeth, because it was more about just stand up for yourself. But when she doesn't shake Benny Safdie's hand, it's like, fuck.
That's a great moment.
And it's a great moment. And it's, again, everybody got their moment. And he's this conductor that is creating this epic movie. Again, it's a history lesson that he fashioned into a blockbuster that people went to see a lot. And it's exciting and interesting, despite the fact that it's mostly people talking. To me, that's an accomplishment.
Tim, this was your number one too.
Yeah, what Chris said. No, I mean, you know, look, Kev's criticism of it aside, and I actually agree in that aspect. I think Christopher Nolan's attention to detail in leading you along while watching a movie is worth the price of admission this year. And this thing is incredibly shot. It's mesmerizing. It's mesmerizing.
And music, well, it's like a character in the film. We've talked about like Sicario and other films where the music feels like a part of the beating heart of the movie. It's like that in this film.
Yeah. Where Nolan feels like his own character in this movie because of all of that. You just know it's Nolan. And everybody's fucking fantastic in it. Everybody. And while I agree with you, it gets boring in parts and you don't particularly feel for some. I think, you know, Nolan doing what he does scene wise and the way he sets everything up, he just kind of takes you out of that. He just kind of flows you along like a professor. And it's just weird. He's really smart about how that movie flows. And it's just so gorgeous.
I think, you know, when you think about, you know, DiCaprio or some other folks that have had kind of like those big sort of movie sits on your shoulders performances this year, you know, Kelly Murphy carries the movie. And, you know, whether it's during the propulsive sort of, you know, let's get the bomb built, let's build the team, the assured Oppenheimer, or the one that is shrunken into himself and is now a shell trying to sort of flagellate himself for creating this monster that the world now has access to. His eyes, just the whole movie, you can lock in on those and you know where you are from a morality perspective. And that just carried me through the whole movie. And it's one of the reasons that I think he might win Best Actor for the Oscar.
Mm. Tim or Giamatti at this point. Yeah. The only thing I'll add before Kev goes is like the performances. Like, I'm glad you talked about Mount Murphy. I'll just like, I thought Matt Damon was outstanding as like the general that has to corral them all together and then check in on them. And that doesn't know any of the science stuff, but understands like has to add the urgency of what's going on back in Washington. Josh Hartnett.
He's so good.
I didn't know you could, again, did not know you so could good. Do that.
Right.
Not since 40 days.
Which is asking way too much.
He was the bomb in 30 days and 30 nights.
Well, 40 days of night. Yeah.
Oh, no. 30 days of night.
Benny Safdie, we mentioned earlier, was really good. There's one scene that David Krumholtz, who is like one of my favorite character actors, has. He's the morality of it, because this is when Oppie was thinking about backing out, and he adds the perspective, like, if they don't do it, like, and he being, he was the Jewish heart of the movie, where he's like, what they're doing to my people over there is why, like, we actually have something to fight for.
Is anybody following him on Twitter currently?
Krumholtz?
Yeah. He's like a huge Knicks fan, is all I know, right?
Is he?
Follow him. He is fucking hysterical.
Okay.
He's telling like real life stories of his past crazy shit. I was reading it like 1 o'clock in the morning. I was like, instant follow, and it hasn't stopped. It's amazing. Absolutely fucking amazing.
All right. We'll do that now. There's a scene in, and this is what, like you mentioned, like a lot of dialogue can be boring, especially compared to like the sports movie that's happening over in Santa Fe. These being able to make men talking in rooms interesting is really tough to do. Like the greats do it. Tarantino does it. Noah Baumbach does it. Like some of the better screenwriters should do it. When Oppenheimer and Matt Damon go to the meeting where they decide what cities they're going to bomb, and you realize the course of history is going to be changed when they decide this, and the fact that the only reason that Hiroshima got bombed was because another city where the general making the decision was like, oh, we honeymoon there. I don't want to ruin that. Right. Let's do this one. Yep. And it's just like crossing a name off a list. And like the weight of that and how it's played so offhanded is like, oh, not this. We'll do this. Like, let's not get a burger tonight. Let's get Taco Bell. Like, no, like that's how light of a decision that was. And yet the weight of what the decision, and that's why like I've rewatched on my rewatches, Chris, like I pay attention to the last hour to be like, what happens after you come down from the high of blowing up the bomb?
Sure.
And I've caught enough.
To me, that's where there's a lot of meat to the rest of the movie.
Yeah. I love this movie. It's like you said, it's what Nolan's been building up to. Kevin, we skipped over it when it was your number six. So I want to give you the floor for a bit.
No, but it's a fantastic movie in terms of the technical aspect. I don't need to revisit. I will say one of the weirdest criticisms that this movie's gotten that they don't show what happens when the bomb drops. And it's like,
folks,
that's insane. If that's what upsets you, that's you. Therapy, do something. That's really a strange fucking thing to get upset about.
Those are the same people that are like, I wish Zone of Interest showed me what happened. Right.
Like, why didn't they show me the other side of the fence? Right. Yeah. You were there for the wrong reason. Yeah.
Who's on the other side of that fence? The neighbor from Home Improvement?
You're kidding me? That's had a fucking bad visual.
I also think showing it from I can't. I'm trying so hard. Again, similar to Zone of Interest, showing it from that perspective. Okay, I tried. Oppenheimer, check it out.
Oppenheimer, check it out.
Do we want
so who each? Has not described their number one movie yet?
No, that's it. It's me and it's
right because you had Zone of Interest, Kevin. You were Zone of Interest
lives.
Also.
No, he's Past Lives.
Oh, Past Lives, Past Lives. Okay, so we're
done. We just honorable mentions. We have 15 minutes to get to 4 hours.
Let's do it. Four hours.
So let's.
Oh my god!
I will not let us end before 4 hours.
There you go. So then I feel
minimum
like
4:01.
Let's start with him. Like we each get to. Let's. Oh God. We get to name one. We'll do two rounds of honorable mentions, and we'll just go one at a time. So, Tim.
I have like 10 movies in my honorable
never
mentions.
Never mind, Tim, your honorable mentions. And then we'll do Chris's, and then we'll do mine, and then we'll do Kevin.
So my I didn't have a lot of honorable mentions. Like, really, I actually was joking before, but I wanted to talk about Silent Night. Because I kind of did like it.
I haven't seen it, unfortunately, so I can't comment on it.
I don't know why. I just, again, it was one of those I just want to watch something stupid things. And I enjoy it.
I'm sorry.
Oh fuck!
Having
said that, I think there was doves.
Ooh,
I'm not 100% sure.
John Woo, baby.
Mm.
I didn't really have a lot. There was not a lot I liked this year. I watched more TV than I did.
Probably fine. There's
Andrew, thought for. You know, obviously, I think we need to recap the blind spots that we all missed and then kind of huddle back. Sure, up on
a TV episode, we could.
A TV episode for this year, I think, would be really good too.
That works. I mean, it just happened.
Another 4 hours.
I know. But it's like Kevin said before, like, there's a lot of stuff that I just prefer to watch at home. And to be honest, like, you know, TV's doing some interesting things. Like, you know, long storytelling is not a lost art form in some shows.
So Matt Damon went on the Chicken Wing YouTube show, Hot Ones, and they asked him what's happened to, like, why it seems like you only make a blockbuster that kills or like an indie that nobody sees. And he talked about how the DVD being just like phased out is just like part of the conversation that you're not able to... Yeah. Add that back pay of like, if your movie doesn't do well, well, you'll get a portion of the DVD sales. And he says, like, what you should do if you're looking for what, like the $50 million movie that no longer exists or the $70 million movie that no longer exists is go to Prestige TV. And that's where you can find, you know, the long form. Now you actually have a longer runway because rather than make this movie that at best would make 70 mil will give you 8 episodes, 8 hours of runway, and you fill 8 weeks of content for us with as many streaming services that exist. So I'm down to top five. I think it should be limited to top five.
Oh yeah.
But top five seasons of television of 2023 works for me.
I agree. All
right, yeah. Chris, do you want to give your honorable mentions?
Sure. One of them was Killers of the Flower Moon. Another one was Barbie, Air, Talk to Me, The Passenger on Prime with Kyle Gallner. I don't know the kid's name who played the passenger per se, but he was fantastic. It was one of those movies that, like, again, just builds dread throughout. There's a lot going on in it. Very, very affecting. Thanksgiving. Fucking fun as hell, and it was in my top 10 before I saw a bunch of other movies. John Wick 4, I hated John Wick 3. I thought 4 was a return to form.
Yeah. One of my honorables.
It had, like, you know, it sort of I think it finished strong. It finished the way it should. The stair scene was ridiculous. I mean, there's so many great action scenes in it. But it did it in a way that didn't feel as repetitive and boring as the third one. Mm-hmm. So love John Wick 4. Dumb Money.
Hey, one of mine too.
Was really entertaining. Paul Dano was great. You know, the whole Robin Hood GameStop situation. It was just really entertaining. I think, you know, gave people a little bit of like a Cliff's Notes education on how all that went down. But Pete Davidson was great. There are a lot of like famous people in it that had really good roles. And it was great to see Vincent D'Onofrio in a Mets hat chuckling it up as Fat Steve Cohen. but it was really fun. Lot there. I mentioned it. Gran Turismo, I thought was really good, way better than it should have been. And that I thought it was going to be. And then finally, Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool, not as good as Possessor, but a dark movie, fucked up. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it, like, there's a lot going on there in terms of, you know, sort of elite privilege and just this odd sort of perverse idea of what if I was able to watch myself get killed? What would that do to my psyche? Mm-hmm. And what would that do to like my morality? It is fucked up, but amazing. Mia Goth is a fucking treasure to acting. She's great.
She's a revelation in everything.
Infinity Pool. Skarsgård is great in it. I really enjoyed it. It's fucked up, dark. Made my number 10 when I met with the Red River guys, but got pushed back just based on everything that I saw. But Kev, you should check that out. It's fucked up, but really
that's interesting. On Hulu, correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
Infinity Pool. Right,
those are my honorables.
Infinity Pool is super twisted. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. A lot of my honorables have been said. I'll just say four movies that haven't been mentioned yet. Godzilla Minus One.
Absolutely.
And I can't recommend to go see it in the theater anymore. I will, if depending on when this airs, recommend if it's still playing in black and white, go see it. Was so close to being my number 10, but I, again, it's in that portion of my list that is extended. The next one I'll say is The Killer, which is David Fincher and Michael Fassbender. It's much more simple than advertised. I was expecting a very different movie than what I.
It's slice of life. Yeah. It's like basically like a couple days in the life of this guy.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a lot of narration. So it shouldn't work, but I put it on while I'm working a bunch, and it's like, oh yeah, this is that part. So I'll shout that one out. There was a movie, I believe it was on Prime or it was on Hulu, called No One Will Save You, starring Caitlin Dever. She is, it's a home invasion movie, and it's, she's mute. Yeah. She doesn't matter. It's during an alien invasion where it's similar notion of a quiet place, except it's not that they're attracted to sound. She just cannot make sounds. And there's some depth to her character and some past trauma that she's gone to, and how she interacts with the town. I actually was kind of annoyed that this got released on streaming and one of those, because I actually would have wanted to see it on a big screen. Yeah. So I'll go there. And then in a completely different movie, there is a Netflix movie called They Cloned Tyrone. That came out this year.
John Boyega, baby.
I thought it once they go to the I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Once go to the place at the end, I thought it went off the rails a bit, but I was so in on this movie for Jamie Foxx.
God, I don't want to spoil it, but there's so many jokes.
So for the first like hour 45, I was very in, and then it becomes an honorable mention after that. Mm-hmm. Jamie Foxx is outstanding and goes back to his comedic roots here, and I was laughing my ass off throughout a lot of it. Tiana Paris, I believe is her name. She's been in a lot of things I love, including If Beale Street Can Talk. She was in Candyman last year, right? Or 2 years ago.
It was 2 years, I think.
Yeah. Oh, she's... What am I talking about? She's in the MCU. She was in the Marvels this year. I going blind. If you haven't seen these, they cloned Tyrone. It's got a lot of Get Out to it, but I think it's not as good as Get Out, but it in the similar, like, oh, I'm in once you realize what the concept is. So yeah, that'll be my four honorable mentions. And then Kevin, you're up.
Let's see what we haven't said.
Come on, the night, Kev, we need 3 minutes and 8 seconds out of you to get to 4 hours.
The night of the 12th.
What's that about?
I can't do this. it's a crime drama that honestly, if you can see it, check it out. It's
wait, really what's the name of it?
The Night of the 12th, foreign film.
Okay.
Story Ave, which I think is on Stars currently. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, I fucking adored. Absolutely fucking adored
that movie. Did Seth Rogen do that one?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely adored that movie. Totally Killer. I was surprised.
Yes.
All of Us Strangers is a... It's a strange movie.
One of my annoying blind spots, Kev. I agree. From what I've heard, I will agree.
It's going to be on Hulu in a couple of weeks, okay. I believe. If not even sooner than that.
Yeah, it's up if you want to pay for it on Amazon.
I ain't paying shit. You said The Passenger, Clone Tyrone. Rye Lane, I really liked. Theater Camp, I thought it was funny. And 1001 is a... It's a bizarre movie that... doesn't completely work, which is why I didn't come up higher on my list, but I like what they were going for. And say that if you ever get a chance to check that out. And I guess I'm gonna finish with The Blackening. I thought was funny.
Yeah.
I expected a little bit more than that, but I thought it was what I wanted to Maestro didn't happen for anybody, did it?
That was on my blind spot.
Because it was willfully on your blind spot.
Yeah, willfully. Yeah. Like, I have no interest in seeing that. I was amazed that it got as many Oscar nominations as it did, because it didn't do well in any of the other critic circles.
I'm not surprised it did well with critics. I'm also not surprised that people willfully decided not to see it. There's not much. It's a biopic about two people, like a couple that gets old. Like it's really good. He's good.
Both of them are great performances, actually. Yes.
And like the actual, and Kevin, I don't know if you'll echo this, but like the way that he turns it, like Cooper turns the story to reflect her, I thought it was well done. There's not much meat on the bone there.
There's zero meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I loved what he did with The Star Is Born. You know, I really enjoyed that movie and his performance and his direction. But like everything was pointing to, like, you should watch this movie. Like, you like Bradley Cooper. It's a biopic. It's an Oscar bait type movie. And every time I was like, let me watch some Seinfeld. Like, I just...
a current show. He said, fuck.
So, Chris, did you see the movie...
Continue watching.
Did you see the movie Mank, the David Fincher film about...
I did. I actually liked Mank a lot. So, yeah,
it was not bad.
I compared it to Mank, where it's like,
okay,
it's really good. The lead performance is really good. I can't sit here and be like, I'm ever going to watch this again. There's a really good performance by a female actress in it too. Between Amanda Siegfried in that, and then Carey Mulligan in this. I can't sit here and be like, I recommend it. I will just tell you both performances are Oscar worthy or Oscar nomination worthy. It felt very like, okay, yeah, I saw what happened to them. That is their life. You know, that was my takeaway of the movie, at least.
It's accurate.
Mm-hmm. So
no, yeah, that was Saturday afternoon. I literally had nothing to do. I was trying to kill time. Like, also, I heard that it was getting a little bit of buzz at that point in time. I was like, fuck it, let's watch it. And yeah, nothing.
Okay,
nothing at all.
Not bad. Blind
spots that you- It's not bad, just nothing. Blind spots that you now wish you saw or we haven't mentioned?
I can't wait till Iron Claw comes out on streaming on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Zone of Interest comes out on streaming, I will be watching that. I am going to check out Blackberry, Haunting in Venice, The Creator, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, Somewhere in Queens, and I am not going to watch Next Goal Wins.
There's motherfucker, like, come on.
It's literally two movies for me. It's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, and All of Us Strangers.
Mm.
Those are my two blind spots.
I think for me, Dream Scenario, which no one mentioned.
It's with Nicolas Cage.
It's, yeah. It was below the honorable mentions, but I didn't like hate it, you know?
Fair enough.
Have you guys seen the preview for Long Legs, though, which is the Oz Perkins horror movie that's coming out this year with him in it and Michael Moore? Oh my God, I can't wait for that. I cannot wait for that.
Spider-Man. I haven't seen anything yet.
That actually was in my honorables, and I forgot to mention Across the Spider-Verse is very good. And it gets to the end, and it's a cliffhanger to the third. And I'm like, ah, fuck. But still, it was very, very good.
Really good.
Yeah.
See, How to Blow Up Pipeline. Has anyone seen that?
I started it and didn't finish it, but I heard it was really good, but I just ran out of time, you know?
I had it, and I think Hulu glitched that day for me. I was like, fuck it. I never got back to it. Priscilla was something I really wanted to see. It'd be on HBO Max. And
I enjoyed it, too.
To see that.
Yeah.
That looks like it. Movies like The Beast, Boy and the Heron, Asteroid City. Did anybody ever see that?
Oh, it's a slog.
Fair enough.
I'm as strongly as Chris, but I'm not the biggest Wes Anderson fan.
Ugh, I'm so sick of him.
Yeah.
Like, I've been sick of him for over a decade now.
You have.
Chris. He's an very vocal about it.
I mean, really, what was the last movie that I actually enjoyed of him? Was it The Royal Tenenbaums? I think so.
Yeah.
I think I loved Rushmore.
Fucking Rushmore. Good.
Rushmore. It's his best movie as far as I'm concerned. I really liked The Royal Tenenbaums.
I like Bottle Rocket.
I like the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
All right.
And anything else, he is so self-indulgent and so like has a style that is just like, bro, stop it. Like he's just trying to be.
This is a very Wes Anderson movie.
Ugh.
Yeah,
I saw the preview and I was like, "Oh, the colors and the fucking
even more Wes Anderson-y than you think."
That was available free on Peacock for a long time,
and you were like,
"I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know." I was like,
"We're giving this away. Would you like some?"
Any other blind spots, Kev?
No, now that'd pretty much be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Chris, how about you? Other than the ones you mentioned?
Nope. Are that's good? It. Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. That's how you did your list. Okay. Yeah. I think we're.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a version of this where we can finish now if you'd like to.
4 hours and 4 minutes.
All right. Wrap it up.
Yeah. I mean, listen, guys, I don't know about you guys, but this was fun for me. This reinvigorated me. Like I haven't talked about movies at this level of detail with anyone in a really long time. And it felt good. Like it got those juices stirring. I wouldn't want to commit to a schedule, but what I would say is I am interested in us following up after having viewed some of the blind spots. I am interested in having the discussion on like our favorite TV or the best TV that we've seen in the last year. And then as things come up, you know, if there's movies that we love or situations that are happening, you know, where we all text each other, we have a group chat, we might as well be like, hey, do you want to hop on to talk about this? And I think that's probably how we operate best is, you know, let's not try to plan, but when something feels good.
What plans? Get the fuck out of here.
I mean, even this was just basically like, oh, we're going to do a top 10, but it feels good and fun to kind of get back in the mode a little bit. And Andrew, I know you do this a lot. This is the first time in a long time that I've gotten a chance to hang with you guys and just chit chat about a subject that I'm passionate about. So I thank you. And I look forward to, you know, a few more of these every so often.
Yeah, I thank you too, Andrew, for getting us all together again.
Of course. You know, it's been a while since I've talked about movies on a podcast, I'll say, for, and you know, I've told you guys a lot about how much I enjoy your takes and discussing movies and hearing about your opinions. And so this was absolutely a blast. And I also co-sign that the surprise episode of Films on Tap is the best way to plan going forward. Yes, the surprise, we're absolutely back, which, you know, to those listening, you'll be surprised when we drop another one in the not too distant future. But I hope you enjoyed all four parts of this return to form of the Films on Tap podcast.
Jamaica, we got a bobsled.
On that note, Chris, would you like to send us off or sign us off?
Yeah, I forget what I used to do.
Thank you for listening. That's all you got.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening. We've had a blast. Keep an eye out for the next Films on Tap episode.